freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hello!
All right, the Seahawks have themselves a powerful defensive lineman. Brock?
Yes.
What do you think?
He is a ball of muscle.
Is he muscle bound?
No.
He's just a ball of muscle.
Big difference. Muscle Sorry. Bound is a bodybuilder that would pop a hamstring when it's tried to sprint or something like that. A muscle ball.
It's unnecessary. That's gratuitous.
Yeah, a muscle ball just out leverages. And I really, really like the Grady Jarrett comp. I really do. I think that that is.
And you like that one. Like the Mebane comp as well? That's the other one that I've heard thrown out there a little bit.
Yeah, Brandon was low to the ground like that. I mean, remember, he just bam, played low and got underneath you and just really leveraged you. But Grady Jarrett's the guy. Grady Jarrett, I think, is the best comp. Aaron Donald's, come on, man. Aaron Donald was his own creature.
Right. You know, from and Schneider said that. I mean, he's sort of like, hey, what's the body like? It's a little like Aaron Donald, but I'm not saying he's Aaron Donald.
Correct.
But
you run 4.8 at 300 pounds, like you're just different.
That's the comp.
You front squat 500 pounds, you're just different, right? You bench press. Like, he was the freak, as Bruce Feldman preseason last year, and we talked about that. I mean, he just is different. And different as well, because he's the only D tackle taken in the first round. So, you know, you can look in the rearview mirror when everything gets done and go, whoa, okay, this guy was on an island now. Right? There were 8 offensive tackles. There was a center. There was a tight end. Brock Bowers, you're not going to do either of those moves. So who was the one that kind of stood apart from the rest in his position group in this draft? That guy. That guy. 4 defensive ends went. 8 offensive tackles went. 7 receivers went. All 6 QBs went in the first 12 picks, which I'm sure left that war room like, whoa, phone ringing, buzzing, can you trade? What can we do here? Man, we're going to have the top corner. We're going to have the top possibly D-tackle. We're going to have the top this, top that. And as I said in my draft preview, man, I tipped my cap. I wouldn't have done it necessarily at 16, but I tipped my cap.
Why wouldn't you have done it?
I would have just been a little, and this is just my own bias. It's just the games that I did, right, where I walked away from 3 or 4 Texas games. I never went total game wrecker, total game changer, got to have them. But you look at the next level number, Salk, and he is right there. The pressure rate at 13%, like number 1 or 2 in the country, like right there. The disruption rate, right there. You know, what they're going to ask him to do to penetrate and knife through and like, it, yes, for them, the next level stuff, home run. I don't get the next level stuff. I just get my 60-minute game.
Well, that's okay, and that's sort of what I'm curious about.
Yes.
Like, you just didn't feel like he jumped off the screen?
No, and it was also kind of a slow boil, right? It was a little bit of a slow build over those years. Not the highest recruited. A lot of these guys in the first round yesterday, go look at it. Five-star.
I kind of like that. I like the guy who's self-made.
Yes. Left after 3 years.
And that was a bunch of the guys we talked about, right? Faltano was a 3-star guy who turned himself into a great player.
Yep.
And Jared Verse started at Maryland, Albany, even worse, right? And ended up at Florida State. I mean, like a bunch of the guys we talked about were not the big-time, blue-blooded Joe Alt, 6'8", whatever.
This dude also played at like a blue-blood Texas high school. The Soto High School is like a big-time factory, and it wasn't like he was the star there. He had to be self-made, and then, oh, you know what, he's 6 foot tall, so 3-star, come to Texas, kind of develop, a lot of talented guys, a lot of higher-rated guys, a lot of big stars all around you.
But he kept shining
through. Dude just kept going to work.
Yeah, I will say, you know, Joel Klatt told us that, you know, he's part of the run wall and that that's why they should take him at 16. I got some Matt Miller sound I'll play you, but of all the people that spoke about him, I thought Mark Dominic just this past week was probably the most convincing.
I think he's a stud. I love this player. I think he's got quick twitch. He's got different rush moves. He certainly can beat you inside on one-on-ones, but he's also able to get small and skinny and split double teams and create a lot of problems. You know, it's interesting. I always felt like this league has never valued TFLs the way it should. TFLs are sacks. And until we start to look at TFLs as the same as sacks and start to like really, you know, support that, I think this guy's a TFL monster, and I think he could be a good sacker. I think he's going to go, though. I think he's the first defensive player off the board.
Well, he was pretty close. He was the second defensive player off the board, not the first. And my guess is he was the first on the Seahawks draft board because I don't think they were necessarily going to draft Latu. And Brock, I got to wonder, right, because you mentioned yesterday that they're – so just trying to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
Their medical guys know a lot of the same people from Washington, or maybe even are some of the same people. Any chance that Fautanu knee injury thing played a role in
possibly,
that?
Possibly, as I saw him. I mean, and I was sitting there, right? It was a really weird feeling. Like, the year before, sitting there at number five is, like one of the callers said, it's just Christmas. Like, right. Oh, my gosh. And obviously, we spent so much time on that pick. Jalen Carter, Spoon, Jalen Carter, quarterback. I mean, it was just
Spoon.
Outrageous.
I never talked about Spoon. I talked about him for like a minute and a half.
Outrageous. As it got closer, we had a little feel that they may go corner right there. Last night, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they can't take a corner. Like, DJ's mock was like, they can't take a corner. Like, please don't take a corner. Like, it's a big part of my body. Like, please don't take DJ Daniel Jeremiah, don't be right. Don't take a corner.
That would have been so brutal.
But he's number one corner. He's number one corner. Okay. So that's part of me. And then I got Fautanu, who I just love, who the callers who called in last segment just loved. I love Troy Fautanu. They showed the picture of him.
I'd vomit.
And, yeah, that was about the corner, not about Troy.
No.
Because Troy's got like 500 family members, including his two grandmothers and maybe great-grandmother, right?
Good,
I mean, it was
him.
Just like unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then when the pick came, it was like, oh, that's right.
Right.
That's right. That dude's still there. Oh, that's right. That's the one really disruptive defensive tackle. And
I felt very, very similar. Yes. So if I was watching everybody fall, I'm like, okay, interesting. Oh, Bo Nix. Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. I as it was coming, I was expecting I was expecting the trade down.
Yes.
The whole time. It's like, okay, yes. They got a trade down. There's like five good players left here that we've talked about. Yep. They got a trade down. When I see what Jacksonville got, that's garbage.
Yeah,
you can't trade for that.
Wouldn't do that.
Jacksonville trades the next pick and gets the 23rd pick plus a fifth rounder, worthless, and next year's third and fourth. You don't need that. You got a whole bunch of comp picks.
Now, it may have been a little sweeter because, well, the 1D tackle that's in the draft was there that you ultimately took. So there may have been teams.
If it was a deal like this,
yeah, you
I'm
can't
out.
Do that.
No, that is a terrible deal, and I'm
totally
glad John passed.
If you didn't
on
get
that
in the second round, you could not do that.
So once that didn't happen, I'm going, all right, the pick is in. Okay, here we go. What are the choices? I figured it would be Fautanu. That was what my gut was telling me. There was a part of me going, all right, we didn't talk a lot about, was it Dallas Turner?
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't supposed to be there. The fact that he is an Alabama guy and this and that, like, maybe they just want to go get a flat-out pass rusher.
I mean, just a total different dude, right? 6'3", 250, ran 4'4", jumped 40.5". I mean, we spent a minute on him yesterday because we thought, well, he's going to go 8 to Atlanta. He's going to go about.
Well, he's there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a conversation. The part of me that just wanted to get the guy I liked, Jared Verse, was like, okay, if Jared Verse is there.
Sure.
So those were sort of the names I was thinking about, and then also hoping beyond hope that it would not be a corner and that I was going to have to come in today and vomit on the air, which I would have done. I would have made myself vomit. I would have brought a bag.
Yeah.
I would have. Yeah. Cornered 16 would have been insane. Yeah. I also did not think that they would take Byron Murphy in that spot. And shame on us. They had a terrible run defense for the last 2 years. This guy stops the run.
You know the beauty.
How hard is this?
You know the beauty of Dave Wyman?
We were overthinking it.
Dave Wyman's like Mike Blowers.
Right? So much.
There's so much Blowers.
They are Wyman. As similar as any two media people in this market.
I mean, you can make a movie. Reality TV with just those two guys. I mean, it just, they.
Because, Wyman and Wilson.
Yes. And he just says something, and it was right before the draft, or maybe even before the Seahawks. He's like, okay, so what? Because it was like Fautanu or defense, offense or defense. And he's like, guys, what was worse last year?
Right.
What was worse the year before? Like, what's been the problem here? The offense has been pretty good.
It's been fine.
Yeah. The offense has been fine. What has been really bad? The run defense. So go fix it. And this is the one guy in the defensive line room. Now, Johnny Newton's probably going to get drafted in the first three or four picks here in the second round, the D tackle out of Illinois. But this is the one guy. They, you know what they did at Texas? Stop the run. You know what he was? Co-Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. So I can sit here and say, I didn't. 11.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks in a rotation with the number one rush defense in the conference and one of the better ones in the country.
It's pretty good. Yeah. I again, it
and then,
surprised
hold on a second.
Me,
and
but
then,
it really shouldn't have.
No, exactly. And then when I hear Mike McDonald say what he said, talking about the versatility, and I'm like, oh, now you're just speaking my language. Give me a Vegemite sandwich. Like, yes, now we can have different schemes versus different people and do different things. Now, you know, series
because
here.
Because what? Because he can line up on the edges and right up front.
Because he runs 4.8 at 300 pounds. because he can slice through and move, and he can play the nose. Okay. He can play the three. He can do different things. And I got Leonard, and I got Jaron, and I got Trey. Like, you just gave your head coach, who's a defensive coordinator, and Durday. And by the way, I love Durday on the call. I love when he called Murphy last night, and Murphy's like, yes, sir. Because Durday just has this little, like, flash, and obviously the British accent and everything else. But, Salk, this is your lineup. This is your baseball lineup. This is being able to run out a right-hander and a left-hander. Oh, we're facing this pitcher? Then I can move my lineup around. This is lengthening your lineup at the most important position.
Speaking of which, I got a ton of questions. I'm going to hit you with a bunch of rapid-fire questions about this pick. We're going to do that at 7:30. And we will talk about what went down before the draft yesterday.
The big race!
Yes, of course. That'll come up here in about 20 minutes as well. But you mentioned how it's nice to have a righty and a lefty for the right spots and whether or not it makes sense to just play the lefty all the time, no matter what. Nope. Sometimes you want to play the righty, and it paid off yesterday. We'll tell you how next.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, if you say, Brock, that you want to be all about the line of scrimmage, you know what you got to do? Spend your resources accordingly and actually make yourself better in the line of scrimmage. And that is exactly what the Seahawks did yesterday. They stay at number 16 and they select the second defensive player taken in this draft, the first interior defensive lineman. By now, you certainly know the name. And you should be excited about it, right? Byron Murphy.
With the 16th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Seattle Seahawks select Byron Murphy, defensive tackle, Texas.
All right, so he's coming. Mm-hmm. He's not the tallest, longest, rangiest guy, but he is very, very strong. He is very, very powerful. And I think John Schneider was all shocked he was there.
So, yeah, Byron Murphy. Obviously, everybody's very excited. We had him, graded as the best defensive player in the draft, which, obviously you guys saw all the offensive players going. Rare to see that. Very rare year, but high motor, high effort, great individual. 3 years, 21 years old, got his degree in 3 years. Just up and down the line of scrimmage, pass rusher, TFLs, you name it. A lot of utility, a lot of variety. Yeah, I mean, to sit here and think that when we started it that we'd be able to acquire him was, we'd be lying to him.
Yep. Yeah, not just rare, unprecedented, never done before. 14 straight offensive players to start that draft. Poor Dave Wyman over there representing the defense. Like, do I ever get to play? Do I ever get to anybody on the defensive side? And you do watch this draft, and you do realize how much genetics matter. Like, these guys are just different. They're just built different.
Oh, it's nice to see you recognize that, finally.
What's that?
The genetics matter, at least a little bit.
I mean, you got 6'8". And this guy, I had a little flashback to the number of times. And Pete Carroll said to us about Aaron Donald, like, I'm sorry, they don't build him like that. They don't build 280-pounders that run 4.5, 4.6. There's not many. So even Grady Jarrett, looking at his numbers out of college, he ran over 5 flat. This guy's a 4.8 guy. That kind of explosion, that kind of power, it didn't exist with any other singular defensive tackle in the draft. And it's why he was the only one taken and why he's a Seattle Seahawk.
Well, he also, look, I mean, the one criticism you keep hearing is just length, right? He's not as tall as you would want somebody to be at that position. He doesn't care.
I knew I had to focus on technique, right after, especially, right after I left high school, because I knew guys were going to be, way bigger at the collegiate level, stronger. So, technique is everything. When you play with great technique, great fundamentals, there's nobody can stop you. Strength doesn't matter at that point.
So that's what he sounds like, and you'll get to hear more of him. He's going to join us in a few hours. 9 a.m. this morning, we will speak with Byron Murphy.
Here's the second thing you need
to
know.
You're wearing your Seahawks shirt today. I thought you'd be wearing more Husky gear, because what a night for the Huskies yesterday. Michael Penix, the shock of the draft. He goes number 8 overall. I get why somebody would want Michael Penix at that spot. I would have liked him at 16. Why did the Falcons want him after spending that kind of cash on Kirk Cousins?
I have no idea.
I understand why you'd want Michael Penix over Kirk Cousins. I don't understand why you'd spend the money on Kirk Cousins only to then draft.
Correct.
The problem is Cousins.
The problem is the timing. The problem is free agency happens well before the draft happens.
I don't care. You can't commit. Like, once you've committed, haven't you committed?
Yes. And this isn't Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. Alex Smith wasn't making the kind of loot with the guaranteed money that Kirk Cousins is going to be making. And it's why Arthur Blank from Home Depot looked at the guys in the room like, what business did we just do?
What are we doing?
Now, I love this. I love this fit for Michael. And, he gets to go back south. He's got receivers galore. He gets to play indoors. He gets to play fast.
He gets to play.
You got Raheem Morris, who's been out on the West Coast. You got Jimmy Lake, been out on the West Coast, the D coordinator there. Zach Robinson going to run assist.
Like, still weird.
For Michael Penix.
Still very weird.
Very, very weird. In that locker room now in Atlanta, going to be very, very weird.
Now, Roma Dunze goes. He's going to join Caleb Williams in Chicago. Congratulations to him. Seahawks had a shot at Fautanu, decided they did not want to go that direction. He goes at number 20 to join Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh.
Isn't Pittsburgh like the fit?
Of course.
If you weren't going to be just a Seahawks.
Yep.
Like David DeCastro back in the day from Bellevue and Stanford. Like, go just be a Steeler.
Just perfect for him. NFC West. Hawks are going to have some dudes to contend with, by the way. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be in Arizona, as is Darius Robinson. Jared Verse is going to be in L.A., so we can certainly watch and see between Verse and Murphy moving forward. Niners, maybe a bit of a surprise taking Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver, but they may have to trade one of their dudes, so we'll see where that goes. The thing I want to ask you about is the report that the Seahawks were trying to trade up for Penix.
Yeah. Spicy.
I like that.
Spicy.
Yeah, I wonder what Gino thinks of that. It's a question to ask maybe on Monday. Maybe a Monday question.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, it's not always pretty, but it certainly got the job done yesterday. We were just talking, right, about whether or not it makes sense to keep a platoon at third base. I'm like, of course it does. Mm-hmm. These guys are succeeding because they're put in the best position to do so, and it paid off yesterday.
Now the 1-0 pitch to Luis. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Langford going back to the warning track, to the wall. Goodbye, baseball! Luis Urias with his second home run of the season. Second two-run shot for the Mariners this afternoon, and it's now the Mariners 4 and the Rangers 2.
Ty France had the other one. They're like the two most opposite players, hitters anyway. France with his smooth swing, covers the whole plate, always under control. Urias just attacks. I love watching him. I'm not telling you he's the best player in the team or anything, but I really enjoy watching that guy hit. He's my favorite.
Yeah, I was driving around listening to the game yesterday, and it sure sounded like Ty France did an amazing job at first picking a bunch of balls in the ground as well. We talked about the margin right now, right? And the margin against Texas and the margin without JP. And, that margin is small, but, man, Luis delivered. I did not think, listening to the game, I thought there's no chance he's getting through six.
He just did.
I mean, that pitch count is up and up and up, and Texas just grinded him. And yet, he's like, nope, I'm going to get through six. We're going to get to our high-leverage guys, and we're going to win this series.
That's a stud-level performance from Luis Castillo, and that's now a couple in a row, three in a row now.
It's just a grown man experience. Yeah.
Like, just like, hey, I know what to do. Uh-huh. I got it. I'm smart. It's not just my stuff.
Yep.
I know how to pitch. He's kind of in that sweet spot where he still has his good stuff, but also has learned how to pitch. Heck of a job yesterday. So they come home in first place after winning a series in Texas. Not good news on the J.P. Crawford front. He's on the IL. They'll get to it tonight. Arizona's in for three. Kirby Hancock, Gilbert starts in those three games. All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on
what
the Rock
day.
And Salt Show.
Holy smokes, yesterday.
It's a big day yesterday.
Wow. Mariners won a series. Local boys get drafted, done good.
The big race.
Oh, the big race.
Then there was the big race.
And that
happened. We don't have to talk about that.
For those that want to find out what happened with the big race, first of all, the full video will be up on the Seattle Sports YouTube page at 9. So go there now and subscribe so you get the alert and everything else, and you can just go watch. Justin, how long is that video? Like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, something like
just
that?
Just over two.
Just over two.
And I want to apologize. I was just a dork.
Are you kidding me? You made the video.
I know. So silly.
It wouldn't be the same without you.
Brock's going to apologize, and I am going to tell the story of a famed Greek general next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, yesterday was the big race. We're going to come right back to the Seahawks pick of Byron Murphy, who's going to join us in an hour and a half at 9 o'clock.
What did I just stuff in my mouth?
That's a macaroon. That's a shout-out to Frank Summerall over there. He's
my fifth bite, and Brock put the entire thing in his mouth.
They're delicious, right?
Probably not a one-biter.
No, that's not a one-bite deal. Coconut is a little too chewy for that to be a one-biter.
Yep.
But, really good. Coconut macaroons, like a chocolate base, really tremendous. Ooh, yeah. All right. I got a, like 6-7 rapid fire questions for you on Byron Murphy, which we'll get to here in a moment. I know there's been a lot of interest in the big race. The big race. Yes. It went down yesterday in the freezing rain at Husky Stadium. Beautiful track. Thank you to them for helping us out. Justin and everybody did a great job. Carlos of filming. Simeona was out there. The Rev was out there. It was great. And, probably should have warmed up a little bit more. Didn't. Okay, fine.
Not a probably.
Yeah, should have warmed up more.
Yeah, and your buddy Buckaloo, who's a runner, world-class
but
runner.
But it was so miserable outside that I didn't want to run anymore.
Mike, you've got to get warm.
But it was so cold.
You did one lap at half speed and stretch. Like,
anyway.
Yes.
So we got out to the starting blocks, and Brock yells, go.
Mm-hmm.
And Maura was in the lead because she was in the outer
staggered.
Lane.
It was a
staggered start. And I thought I got by her pretty quickly, which was good. And so now I find myself in the lead, and I'm kind of going around the turn. And I did pause for a moment to give a little look at the camera, a little wink at the camera to let everybody know.
Kinda, obnoxious.
I was playing the heel all day. What do you want in my life? Like I had a guy
playing the heel.
I had a guy carrying a umbrella for me as we walked out to the start, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was up by a bunch, and I decided. I looked in the rear view and was like, "Okay, let's go for it now."
Let's step on.
And I really tried to step on the accelerator, and I took about 3 steps at full speed, and popped the hammy. It's unbelievable. Now.
I thought you were mocking me.
I was not. I would not do that to you, Maura. You know I love you. I would never mock you. That is not how
I
feel.
I thought it
about
was
you.
Kind of like, here, Maura. Oh no, I pulled my hammy. Catch up. You were trying. Nope. Like you thought you were being nice, but it was actually really.
I felt like I'd been shot in the back of the leg. I thought somebody had shot me in the back of the leg, and I thought I was going to go down. Now I stayed up.
You did.
I stayed up. I didn't go down. I didn't collapse. I limped to the finish line. How far would you say I had to limp? About 50 yards?
40, 50 yards.
Okay, so it was about the last quarter of the race was limped, and I still won by about a second.
Yep.
It was about a second difference between me and Maura.
Yep.
So I think everybody loses. I really feel like everyone lost. You guys know about the Greek, General Pyrrhus, who won a victory but lost so much of his army that it was called a Pyrrhic victory from then on out. And that's what this was. It was a Pyrrhic victory. So, Maura, here's what I propose. Because I'm embarrassed today for my age, and you should be embarrassed today for your athleticism. We both had a bad day. Can we agree on that?
I'm not happy watching myself finish that race. I look slow.
Better conditions, though.
Right.
But I will say for us, both only having run a 200 for the first time this week.
Yeah, pretty good.
I just wanted to do under 40, and we both did that. You actually were probably going to be closer to 33, 34 if you hadn't pulled your hamstring, which...
Mm-hmm. I mean, I never said I was fast. While limping.
Yeah. I never said I was fast. I just thought I was going to be faster than Salk, and you...
I'm pretty fast.
You're faster than I thought.
I don't know why people say this. I am actually pretty fast in a short race, and I...
Don't talk about yourself in a way that makes people think you're athletic.
I mean, I tried to tell everybody that this wasn't even going to be close. Right.
You go
whatever.
Home and take 4-hour naps every day. Forgive me if I thought that I might be able to beat you.
I've been resting up for this race for years now. Anyway, here's my proposal, because I don't want to spend all day on this. You guys can watch the YouTube video when it comes out at 9 o'clock. Here's my proposal. We both chose a charity for this. You chose Girls on the Run. I chose Baseball Beyond Borders. I would like to donate to both charities today. I will do it when I get home because I feel honestly like we both lost. So I feel...
So they should both win.
Now, here's the... Before I do that, though, let me actually put that on hold. I'm going to go to the doctor later today to check on the hamstring. If I need surgery and this is... Yes, just in case. I think it's okay. I've been icing it, but I just want to make sure that everything's all right.
Do you have the ice pack with you?
Oh, no. I do, yes. As long as I don't need surgery and something that's going to cost money, I plan to donate to both charities.
That's great.
If, however, it's going to cost me thousands of dollars in medical bills, might have to put that on hold for a little while until I pay off all the debts.
Yeah.
But I plan to donate to both charities. Both are incredibly deserving and awesome. My kids both did Girls on the Run at Green Lake and loved it and honestly are both much better runners for it, and it gave them a confidence in it, which was amazing and a life skill, and it's a phenomenal organization to get your kids involved in. I'm so glad you chose it. I would be honored to donate to them in addition to the money I spent on both the kids.
I'm
doing
donating
it
to them right now.
Okay, Justin's going to donate to them right now. And then I'm also going to donate to Baseball Beyond Borders. And I'd like to get more involved with them, actually. I think they'd be an awesome fit with us here at the station. And maybe we'll find a way to kind of work through them to do some more cool stuff. So thank you to everybody for your interest in the race. Screw you to every one of you who doubted me and thought that I was such an unathletic slob that I was going to get my butt kicked in a 200-meter race.
Fueled you.
And kudos to every one of you who said I was going to get hurt. I am an idiot for not listening to you. I don't know why I decided to turn on the jets such as they were in those last 50 meters. I'm embarrassed. I am horrified. I am honestly laid low by the whole thing. And if you run away from me, there's nothing I can do to catch you right now because I can barely walk.
Well, I was impressed you got off the couch and were that fast.
Thank
Congratulations.
You,
can I save you the doctor visit? Just get below the cameras right now. Yeah. Lay down. Let me see.
If no
you
any, way. If, there's no bruising.
If you were the bruising, one that stretched him out. You didn't
any
do him
discoloration.
There's no discoloration.
Then don't go to the doctor.
But
you're
I also
okay.
don't bruise.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't bruise.
Okay, can we get to rapid fire? Let's go.
Bruise. We'll
get
to my
life. We'll talk about this later.
I don't think I've ever had a bruise.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, here we go.
Unbreakable.
Neither is Byron Murphy.
Bruce
Let's go.
Willis
here we go.
Unbreakable.
Here we go.
I feel very breakable. I'm unbruisable. All right, Brock, a bunch of questions about Byron Murphy, 16th pick to the Seahawks yesterday. How will he be used?
In multiple ways. So a lot of three technique, a lot on the guard, like the Warren Sapp back in the day while he was at Texas. Because why? Well, you had Andre the Giant that ate up a couple other guys in Tavondre Sweat. So he played a lot of that. He played a little bit of nose. They moved him around. Pete Kwiatkowski, he's a guy we'll probably talk to. I will certainly text today the D coordinator down there, former Husky D coordinator, guy I'm friendly with, and we'll ask him. You know, he's not nearly as exotic as Mike McDonald will be. Their fronts and coverages are pretty simple at Texas because they have the personnel, especially in their conference, formerly the Big 12, to dominate. He will be multiple. He Leonard, Jaron, Dre will be very multiple week to week.
What will he do best?
He will get under the pads of people like Grady Jarrett, and he will create a new line of scrimmage. So he has what Puna Ford, and kudos to Puna. Puna tweeted last night, Seahawks get a star, you know, love him. Puna was a low leverage, you know, leverage guy too, right? I mean, he was 5'11", but then Puna didn't have the explosion, right? Mm-hmm. He kind of hold his point pretty well, but he couldn't really penetrate and disrupt and just reset the line of scrimmage the way that this guy's force
gets into
is
the
capable
backfield,
of doing.
Right?
Yes.
It's a huge difference.
Yes. So, you know, I've always wanted the camera. I've asked, and it's hard to do because the side judge stands right in front of the marker as well. So, and you can't put it on the side judge because they move all over the place. But I would always love a shot right down the line. Mm-hmm. So you can just see, like, tug of war. Look at that line, reset that way. Look at that line, reset that way. Like, which group, offense, defense, on that line of scrimmage is resetting it? He should help do that.
How will they rotate him? I mean, like, how much can he play?
Oh, he's got a lot more work capacity than Tavondre. Yeah. I mean, he played a lot. He's a three-down guy. He could play every down.
But
for
I mean, I was just reading how they did rotate him a lot. I mean, he's part of a rotation at Texas. Is that sort of the expectation here?
Yeah, I think I told you early this season and I love Tavondre as well, and we'll see if he's there in the third round. When I did their first game this year at Texas, and it was Texas Rice, and I walked into their indoor facility, and I'm like, man, and I had to call the SID down. I'm like, hey, can you come down here and point out? You got like 8 D tackles here that all look different. That group was just different. And I knew they would be a playoff contender this year. And they ultimately get to the playoff, lose to Washington in a thriller because that group in particular, he and his buddies. So they didn't have just one or two. There are multiple guys. There's some young guys that will be future NFL guys. So he rotated there, and you're going to have to do some rotating here, no question about it.
Why him over the other defensive options? I mean, we can debate whether or not Fautani should have gone offense or defense, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they had three or four. I mean, they had almost essentially their pick of all the defensive guys. Why Byron Murphy over Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, et cetera? What is it that he brings that they don't?
I think just a more rare physical skill set. You know, Dallas Turner probably close, and it'd be curious to see who was their second-rated defensive player. I don't think it was Latu. I think there were some challenges there with health and just projection game where they're very kind of risk-averse in some of those ways, rightfully so. I'd be curious who their number two defensive guy was. I know they like those edge guys. They're all unique. They were all different. I know they like those two corners. John said as much. Like in a normal draft, Terrion Arnold and Quinn Young, they're drafted in the teens, early teens. But this was not a normal draft. This was a very unique draft. And I think they go Murphy back to those unique gifts that are different. His gifts compared to the other D tackles are different, more different than what Versus' gifts or Turner's gifts or Latu's gifts or any of these edge guys' gifts, Chop Robinson being the fourth in the first round, are to one another.
As you were talking earlier, I wrote down this question to throw in here, and that's just about stopping the run. They've been terrible at stopping the run.
Yes.
They really have.
31st and 32nd.
If you want to stop the run, how important is doing it from the inside
yes.
versus doing it from the edge?
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday, right? The difference of stopping the edge and all the real estate. If that ball bounces, if that ball gets outside, look at all the real estate versus tackle to tackle. Mm-hmm. What is that, 6 or 7 yards? But as Dave Wyman said last night, man, and we've watched this the last couple years, when you can't stop the inside, when you can't hit a fastball, it is the most demoralizing thing in the game.
So it doesn't even matter what you have on the edge.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
If you just continue and they can go to the body and you can do nothing about it, it is demoralizing. Mm. And honestly, like the Baltimore game, the Steeler game, the final home game, you know, those imprints, those things where you just got bullied, where you just got blasted. And then right. Wyman even brought up a few of the others. Oh, that's right. They went to Germany and Tampa hadn't run for 60 yards a game, and they just do whatever
they
want.
They couldn't stop the run. They're awful at it.
Yes. So building a wall, Leonard Williams, Jaron Reed. This
that's how you do it.
This guy, Byron, that's how you start to build.
Who benefits the most from him being here?
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, the linebackers certainly do. So the dependent guys behind that line of scrimmage, right? Those dependent linebackers.
How about the Leonard Williamses and people like him? Like, how much
Jaron
will they
and
benefit?
Leonard and Dre, all of them. Like, you know, we saw that. We saw when, gosh, if you could play four edges and you could play 4 D tackles and you can rotate 8 guys, Saul, guess what? Those 100% can play 56, 60% of the plays, much better for you. See also 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, when there were 8 guys that could play, and they're pretty interchangeable, and they could give you a full tank of gas because they didn't have to play an entire series mm-hmm. and be worn out throughout the process.
Anybody on that roster nervous today?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Jaron maybe. Jaron's going in the final year. You know, Leo got his deal. Dre got his money. So, I don't think they're nervous. I think that's also another factor in this, that, hey, man, you're coming to a group here, and you may not be an alpha, right? You guys, one of the callers in the opening hour of the show mentioned, like, gosh, I didn't love what Dan Brugler said. It took him some time to grow into a leader. That's okay. You know, not every first-round pick needs to be the alpha. If Jaron Reed is the alpha, if the big cat is the established guy, mm-hmm. come in here and be a worker.
Yeah, but long term, I mean, those guys aren't going to be there in theory as long as
correct.
He is. Look, I don't think it's the end of the world either, but it's certainly a nice thing to have leadership, right? Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to not have it.
It is.
But obviously, you'd like to have a guy who's got some of that.
It is. And I'd certainly
and
like...
maybe he does. Maybe he is growing into it.
I would like the green dot to do a lot of that. You know, usually your D tackles, in my life experience, aren't.
Do you think Dre Jones at all nervous today?
I don't know. I don't think so. You know, I was chatting with Brady after the draft last night, and it's going to be a big gap now. And, of course, Condota asked Schneider about that. Like, you know, if you don't trade down, it's kind of – and he gave him the old womp womp, right? Like, yeah, we know, okay? But this guy was so good, we had to take him at 16, and mm-hmm. we don't have a pick today. There's going to be a lot of good players. So is there anybody – you know, that you could trade to come
they
back.
Pick. They have one pick today. They just
I'm sorry,
the
in the third
pick.
Round. Yeah. They're going to have to watch the entire second round.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll ultimately get to 81. I mean, it's going to be a long, 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 long wait for them to make that pick. Is there anybody on the current roster that you could trade? Because, you know, when I asked Brady, like, okay, so what do we have to do value-wise? Oof, man, you got to give up a lot. You got to give up, like, next year's third. You're not going to do that stuff. I just don't see them necessarily doing that stuff. Well, how about a player? Is there personnel on your own roster that you would get? And now you'd be robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, it just doesn't really, I think, fit. So, but he was too good to pass up, too high grade, too different, too unique, all that good stuff, and absolutely addresses one of this team's biggest needs.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right. Thank you, Matt in Oregon, calling me Bruce Willis. That's kind of funny. That's a good Bruce. That's a good one. Unbreakable.
You really
joke.
Don't bruise?
I don't think I've ever had a bruise. I just don't bruise.
The other text that says, you know who else doesn't bruise? Russell Wilson.
No, Russell gets hurt and comes back better. I mean, maybe you can't see it through the hair.
Right.
I don't know. But I honestly, I don't I can't ask Heather. She's like, how do you never bruise? I just don't. Interesting. Yeah. I do a lot of things that I should be bruised from.
Right.
But I just don't seem to bruise. Huh. So I'm a little worried. Anyway, Brock, we talked yesterday about this idea of Seattle taking a cornerback at number 16.
Yep.
How close were they really?
If Byron Murphy had gone 8 to Atlanta.
What if he'd gone 14 to Indy?
Right. Or right before them.
Yeah, what 15? If Indy had taken him instead of Latu?
It was real.
You gotta be kidding me.
It was a real conversation.
Why?
There was real prep because they're really good football players in a division where you've got to cover really good wide receivers. In a league, Salk, where you just saw 6 quarterbacks, 7 receivers, 8 tackles in a league that was dominated by offense. And oh, by the way, you want to play man-to-man coverage and you want to pressure and you want to let the dogs loose, you know what you need to be able to do? Cover. So no, I think it was a real valid conversation, maybe even more so, to be honest with you, of, okay, like all these dudes are here and you know Dallas Turner and you know these edges are going to go. So if we trade to 22 or 23, we could still get a 1 or 2 corner and come in here and lock people down and play man-to-man. Like that resonated with me when Schneider said that after the presser yesterday. Like in any normal draft, these two guys in Philly and Detroit, who are great teams that we're looking up to in the standings and trying to chase, just got better because he knows these are 2 elite corners that in any normal draft could go 10, 12, 13, 15. Mm. But in this draft, ended up falling to the 20s. And man, Philly and Detroit got better yesterday.
I'm sure they did. Thank God the Seahawks didn't do that.
Agreed.
That would have been a Agreed. Terrible decision.
And they did not.
Question number 2. Michael Penix to Atlanta with Kirk Cousins. What happens next?
Yeah.
I see somebody texting. Do they trade one of them? Do they trade Cousins? Would anybody take them?
I mean, is there anybody left?
Somebody said the Raiders. Would the Raiders trade for Cousins?
That's a good question. I mean, goodness.
You'd be eating a whole lot of money for that.
Yes, you would.
Ugh.
Yeah, I I love Bumpus and I both looked at each other like, I love this fit for Michael.
Because you like what? The
because
coach and the
I
scheme?
I love the talent around him. I love the O-line. I love the receiver. I love the tight end. I love the running back. Like, he's got, you know, when he picked Washington, and he picked Washington, and you talked to Kalen DeBoer about that process, Michael was a grown-up then.
Mm-hmm.
He was broken down and knew, I needed tackles. I needed receivers. Like, he didn't go on these recruiting trips. He didn't go in the portal to be recruited. He went in the portal to select the best fit for him. We talk about the draft where you can't choose where you get drafted, right? It's not like the portal. It's not like recruiting. Well, if he could have chose, I get to go to Atlanta. I get to go close to my home in Tampa.
Yeah,
I get to go play in that dome. I get to go play with those receivers.
I get to sit behind Kirk Cousins.
In his mind, do you think he's sitting behind
Kirk
Cousins?
No, but I mean, they just spent $160 million
on
him.
For a second in his mind, he's
Brock,
thinking about Kirk Cousins.
They're paying him $40 million a year.
Fine. That's on them. That was their decision.
Okay.
And they decide to take me even with that?
They're a mess. I'm sorry,
How
man.
How about that Salt? They still decide to take me even though they made that commitment.
I would have loved to have heard Belichick talking about that after he got negged from the job there in Atlanta. Belichick, by the way, nice job by McAfee to have Belichick on and totally wasted.
Jeez.
You have Bill Belichick giving draft analysis and you're like, hey, let's interrupt him with Oz the Mentalist. What? What are we doing?
You know what it is? In a light scale, what did they give Matt Flynn here? $10 million guarantee?
Yeah.
What did they give Kirk? About $100 million? It's like 10X.
Brock, it's absurd.
It's like 10X.
It's insane.
The Matt Flynn deal here.
All right. Question number 3. 14 offensive players all went to start this draft. Is this the future, or was this just the way this year was built?
This feels like an aberration.
Okay, good.
This feels like in the cycle of things. Like, a running back will never get drafted again in the first round. No, a running back's going to get drafted again in the first round.
But it'll be a mistake.
No, there will be a difference maker, and there will be that guy. Now, there wasn't one in this draft, and these things tend to be cyclical. Oh, my gosh, it's all defense. I mean, is there ever going to be a year where we're going to have offensive linemen drafted? Because there's 8 defensive tackles drafted in the draft a few years ago. No, just be careful about ever. Mm-hmm. But this market this year was absurd. This market this year, it was a good thing to be a tackle, good thing to be a receiver, great thing to be a quarterback. And, you know, I said this repeatedly through the first 10 picks because I had heard it leading up to the draft. There was a lot of anticipation. The teams were not going to get too cute. Jim Harbaugh was not going to get too cute, Salk. Are we going to take a receiver? Are we going to trade this pick? Don't get cute. Go take a generational left tackle, cornerstone guy. Don't get cute, too cute. Go take that tackle because they don't grow on trees. This was kind of a supply and demand market where you got huge, huge supply out of places you don't normally get as much. Mm-hmm. You just don't. You don't normally see these kind of difference makers at these positions, and the teams were smart enough, wise enough to go get them.
There you go. That is today's Blue 88. 206 says Belichick did a great job. Totally agree. Belichick was amazing. Did you see some of his breakdowns?
I listened to him talk about the Randy Moss trade. I'm like, you can talk that fast?
Oh, it's awesome. Did you see him break down Drake May?
You can talk that easily?
The Drake May thing was awesome.
No, I did not.
Oh, my gosh. You'll love it. Just go back, watch some of these videos. All right, look at this throw here. He can really drive the ball down. No, that's terrible. He just can't do it. I mean, he's just like...
He's hard on the quarterback.
He is hard, obviously. Mm-hmm. But he's just like, you got to stand. Where's he going? Why is he in the pocket? Mm-hmm. Just stay in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And he's just crushing them. It was great. Let's see. Salk still thinks it's stupid Kansas City took Mahomes because they already had Alex Smith. No, not analogous at all. And by the way, 360, I see your last text. It says, according to Salk's theory, they're also putting Urias in the best possible situation for him. Hey, look, guy hit a home run yesterday, 360. I see you. I got receipts on you, 360.
Oh, when they text, you can see their history?
Oh, I can see your history. So you were wrong yesterday, and you're wrong again today, 360. What do you think about that? Huh? Anyway.
Better now?
Not really. No, not really.
Any favorite moments when I was working yesterday? It's the one thing about being like live, doing that for 4 or 5 hours. You don't hear all the commentary. You don't see all the. I saw a few of the pictures. I was really glad that that gal at the end of the round kept that top on. There were some really risque tops.
Really?
Like, yeah, come on, cover that thing up. Like jumping around, like we could have had some moments. I did see that in flashes. Anything else jump out to the three of you watching it?
That didn't jump out to me.
I mean,
you didn't see Nate Wiggins' lady? Like, it was scary at the end of the first round.
The only thing that really jumped out to me was how unhappy the cornerback from Toledo looked. He looked miserable.
Yeah.
He looked like he didn't want to be there, that he hated the world. He was just like, whatever.
Where did he end up going? He was the first corner taken, right? Tarian went to Philly. No, Detroit? So he went to Philly. Tarian went to Detroit. Right. So that kid went to, why are you
drafted
so
by a good team? Yes. And he's just like, ugh.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's terrible. Mm. I hate my life. Like, he just seemed like the most depressed dude ever.
You're going from Toledo to Philly.
All right, like, what's the problem?
First round.
You're out of Toledo.
First
what else do you need?
Taken.
I know.
Who was it that gave, someone gave Goodell a bear hug, and they were talking about how he just had back surgery or something.
Yes, Goodell did?
They picked him up off the ground.
Oh, that was the big dude from Bama. Latham. Mm. Oh, yeah, he bear hugged him. And old Rogers had a tweak back, like your tweaked hamstring.
Please don't do that. Get away from me. Yeah. Don't touch me. Yes. Don't touch me. All right, Brock, Mora sent over a tweet last night that we have to talk about because it would have changed the entirety of the way we would have viewed not only yesterday, but the next few seasons. And it still does. It's next on Brock and Salk.